Blog Talk Radio.
Come shine your light, open your heart, show us your gift that sets you apart. When you believe, then you can see that you are the star of your own destiny.
Hi, and welcome to the Honoring Hour. Today is Wednesday, January 26th of 2011. I'm so glad to have you all with us today. Before we get the show going, I'd like to remind you, if you're not friends with us on Facebook, please do friend us on Facebook and LinkedIn and Twitter. Twitter is thehonoringhour.com. LinkedIn is thehonoringhour.com. But Facebook is just Honoring Hour. So if you can go to our main website, www.thehonoringhour.com, you'll have the links to friend us on there, and we'd love to have you join us and keep up with us. And it also reminds you about when the shows are, so that's a great way to have that automatic reminder. Coming up on February 9th, I'm going to have Grandfather Yellow Horseman talking with us about medicine of the heart. And keeping with that, our following show in February, which I can honestly say right now, the date just flew right out of my head, it's the 23rd, we'll be talking about limbic resonance. And that's a show that my friend Michelle Miller has talked with us about, and how we draw things physically into our life, how the body actually works in drawing things into our life. So it's that physical component of the law of attraction that we all have that starts from birth, and it's a very interesting show. So I do hope that you will join us then. Today, I have a wonderful person on here. I love to find different people and unique people just that come out of the blue. And this person was an out-of-the-blue person for me. I received an email about the book that she wrote, Walking Through Illusion, and contacted her, found her fascinating, contacted her and read her book, and have to say I love it. So I'd like to welcome to the show today Betsy Otter Thompson. How are you, Betsy?
I'm fine, Lynn. Thank you for such a lovely introduction. That's great.
Oh, you're welcome. I really do like just finding people that I'm already not familiar with. It just broadens my perspective so much more, and it's a great learning experience for me. So I'm always glad to find people that way. Now, Betsy, because I'm really not familiar with you on a personal level, although, you know, I've read your book and I love the book, which is what we're going to be talking about, do you mind just telling the audience a little bit about yourself and how you got to writing the books?
I would love to. In fact, it's all about the name of your show, actually, about honoring self, because the gift was something that I had to honor myself before it even revealed itself. And the fact that it revealed itself when I was 5 years old, and it happened because my mother was very close to her grandmother, and she talked about her a lot and always was talking about her to me because she said I looked so much like her. And even at five, I was having trouble getting along with my mother, so I thought it was like a real definite asset that I looked like my great-grandmother. And so I decided that to see if I was like her in other ways, and I decided I would talk to her at night. And I didn't tell anybody I was planning to talk to her, so nobody told me that I couldn't. And at five, and I thought that, you know, we had these lovely conversations. It seemed perfectly natural to me that she responded to my questions, and I, for a couple of weeks, I was doing this. And then I thought to myself, well, if I can do this, everybody can do this. So I said to my sister, I told her who I was talking to, and I asked her who she talked to. And that was my first indication that I got of how the rest of the world might react to this gift, because she traumatized me for 3 weeks, teasing me unmercifully about this. And then I began to think, well, she tells somebody else, they're going to react the same way. And so I completely withdrew from it. And it wasn't until I was like around 9 years old when Ouija boards came out. I don't know. I don't think you're old enough, Lynn, to remember when Ouija boards first came out.
I remember them very well, though. I don't know.
Everybody was all the families, our families, and all our friends were getting them, so we got one too. And so my sisters and I couldn't wait to start using this game because it was, you know, it was sort of had an eerie reputation, and we were at the age where haunted houses were kind of the thing to do. So we sat down with this game, and that pointer started moving around. And then the first thing we did was accuse each other of faking the results. But it was excruciatingly slow for three active children. Then pretty soon I was the only person sitting with this board waiting for answers. And then I said, wait a minute, isn't this what I got humiliated for before? And I stopped doing it as well. And then it wasn't until many years later, midlife, and I was in California, And my son was out there in school, and he came over for dinner one night, and we were reminiscing about the past, and he was asking me about my childhood, and I brought up this story of the Ouija board, and we had a big laugh over it. But then as a joke, he gave me a Ouija board 3 weeks later for my birthday. So I called him, and I said, well, you know, you have to come over here and do this with me because it's a game for two or more people. So reluctantly, he agreed, and he came over, and we sat for 4 hours, and in 4 hours we got one sentence, and it was a beautiful sentence. It was in something like, in all that you do, say, and think, you are the love of God now and forever. But it was 4 hours, and my son said, you know, Mom, that's it for me. And so I said, well, you know, what do I have to lose? I'll try it myself and see what happens. So the next day I tried by myself, and the first message I got was, welcome home. And after that I was hooked. But then I had a big challenge after that, because the board had a terrible reputation at that point. This was like 20 years ago. It had a reputation for being evil, and so I didn't want to tell anybody what I was doing, and I had to go through this long process of realizing that the board is a piece of cardboard, and it's just as ridiculous to say that a cardboard has evil as it is to say that a dish rag has evil. It's a tool, and it's a tool like anyone else's tool for a gift. Like the piano is a tool for a pianist, or for a musician, or the easel is a tool for a painter. And any kind of tool can be used in a positive or negative way. And I say that I believe that every gift we're given, you know, everybody has a gift, and it can be used in a positive or negative way. And I use the example of the gift of oration was used one way by Churchill, another way by Hitler, or the gift of movie making, of cinematography, was used one way to create Gone with the Wind, another way to create child pornography. So we are responsible for using our gift in a positive way. And so that's really how it began, and it began in a time in my life when I was I almost became a bag lady. I was in California. I had just gone through my second divorce, and I had no money, and I was living in this one-room apartment that was roach-infested, and I was happy that I was on my own and that I was pursuing a path that was interesting to me, but the picture of my life was pretty dismal. And so I remember I said when I decided I would honor this gift, and honor who I was, I said a prayer one night, and I said that I want to continue doing this. I want to write, and I want to ask questions and write the answers that I get down, but I need a job to support me while I do that. And so 3 weeks later, you know, it's almost as if I said to the universe or to God or what do you want to call that wonderful force out there, that I'm ready. The universe said, okay, if you're ready, we're ready too. And 3 weeks later, I had a job that I would have for the next 18 years that would support me the whole time I was writing. And that was working for a man who was one of the five partners with Castle Rock Entertainment in Beverly Hills. And I worked for him until he was promoted to president of Warner Brothers, and then I went and as his executive assistant to Warner Brothers. So I worked with him for him all those years. It was the perfect job for me in many ways, because it was when I left the office I could write and didn't have to take my work home with me. And I had many wonderful lessons in this job about honoring myself too. And so it was, you know, it was a high pressure job, because any job when you're working for the head of a company is high pressure. But it was very interesting, and I'm very grateful, and he's become a friend, and his wife's a friend, and his children are friends, and so it was really nice, a really nice experience for me. And through the years, the writing has improved, because when it first began going from letter to letter, it speeded up to go from sentence to sentence, and then from thought to thought. And now I don't use the Ouija board anymore. It was like, it was what got me started. And once in a while, I go back to letters when I get stuck on something, but rarely. Most of the time, my focus is enough to hear the message. So it's a rather long-winded story, but it really has to start at the beginning to understand the end. That it's all about what your program's all about, you know, deciding that I was going to honor myself and be who I was, and let everything fall in place from that and go from there.
Right. And, you know, I love that you used that your medium of your tool was the Ouija board. I just think that's so awesome. I don't hear that very often. Matter of fact, I have to say that's probably the first time I've heard that. I do still have my original Ouija board. It's one of the things that I've carried through my childhood. I definitely mine is about as old as they come at this point. So,
well, mine looks like it is. I still have the original one, although it's off in the closet somewhere. But it became cumbersome after a while, you know, because I was using it every day, and it became cumbersome. And so what I did was I just put the alphabet on a legal pad and cut out a hole in a piece of paper and used that. And that worked every bit as well as the Ouija board. And then after that got cumbersome, I used my palm move because by then the alphabet and where the letters were placed was in my memory, and I would just use my palm. And so it that again shows how much it was simply a tool to get me started and help me to hear what Spirit wanted me to say or hear and write about. So that's how it began. And when I had the questions, you know, I wrote self-published 4 books first, and then when I did this trilogy about Jesus, which is about the people who were who lived around him, and it's not about, but the book isn't about Christianity, as you know. It's about people who lived long before Christianity began. But when I had this knew I could use this gift, and I asked what I'm curious about. I was curious about Jesus because I wanted to know whether I'd heard when I was a child was true, or what I could hear that would, you know, come from within me. And so that's how this trilogy began. And the first book is about he and his family. This book, Walking Through Illusion, is about he and his acquaintances. And the next book, which is called Mind, Heart, Wholeness, which is not finished yet, is about his life and when he was traveling and who he ran into and their influence on him and all that. So it's been an interesting journey.
Yeah, and when I was reading it, you know, when I was reading the book, I have so many, you know, I started off thinking, I always think, oh, well, I'll loan this book out because it's starting to be a great book. And then I have to start marking in it because, you know, you're going to be on the show. And then I needed to start flagging the pages. So this book I can loan out only to dear friends because they'll understand the underlines in it. But it's also like it looks like I've had it for a very long time, even though I haven't, because there were so many great phrases that just came from this. I just thought, gosh, these are going to be historically famous one-liners one day, you know, and just amazing little insights. And I couldn't help but wondering, as I was reading the book, because I hadn't gotten to the back and read, you know, some more, I kept thinking, you know, she has to channel, she has to, you know, this just seems such words of wisdom. And, you know, when you were doing this, can you kind of give us an idea of, like, what it felt to actually be having these conversations? Did you feel like you were speaking directly with Jesus? Obviously, that's the point of perspective it's coming from. Or did you feel like it was just some higher wisdom giving you that perspective? Can you talk to us a little bit about that process and how it felt when you were...
Sure. I felt it was Jesus, and but I feel like you can... I truly believe that the world of emotion is available to everyone, and I believe Jesus lives in the world of emotion, as all spirit does. In fact, I believe we all do. The illusion is just here to to challenge us, really, to get past what we see and to realize that our reality is what we feel. So I believe that spirit is available to everyone, and I think if you asked a painter where they get their vision, or you ask a musician where they hear their notes, they wouldn't be able to really explain where it came from. All they know is that they have a gift for music, or they have a gift for painting, and they allow it to flow through them and come out through their gift. And so I'd have to say that's the way it works, and I guess it's logical that it would be Jesus since it was about his life. But I can't really explain it any more than to say that it's that when it happened, it was like an incredible thing for me. I mean, I was walking on air for about, you know, 3 months afterwards because I just couldn't believe this was happening to me, and it was a wonderful, incredibly humbling and wonderful feeling, and still is. In fact, since this happened, my whole life, you know, changed around, because the first half of my life was all about blaming everybody else and making myself a victim and losing all my power. And it wasn't until I honored who I was and took responsibility for the mess I'd gotten my life into, that I was able to change it, because it was as if I said, well, if I've gotten myself in this bloody mess that I'm in, then I can jolly well get myself out of it. So it was that taking responsibility that was crucial to the turnaround. But all the time, I mean, I feel incredibly blessed that I can, that I'm in touch with this energy, but I don't think it's anything that other people can't get in touch with.
Right, you just have to listen to it. And I find it so interesting, and really I think that this is kind of a theme with so many people stepping into the truth and the authenticity of their life, that the thing that turned out to be your path was the thing that you resisted the majority of your life. And that actually brought you or made you feel a sense of isolation from other people. I mean, because, you know, when you were, you know, like you, when you were saying, you know, you approached your sister and she, you know, she teased you relentlessly. And, you know, then when you started with the Ouija board, you didn't want to tell everybody because it was, you know, not the norm, and or, you know, other people weren't doing it. And, you know, so I think I find it so fascinating that so often our greatest gift and our greatest benefit to following our path is the one that doesn't show up in societal norm as acceptable.
Yeah, I think this is very true. And I have to be honest with you and say that I didn't really completely come out of the closet until about 3 years ago, because when I wrote the last book, the Mirror Theory, which is about Jesus and his family, I was embarrassed and worried about being humiliated again by saying that I was speaking with Jesus and what people would say. So I called Jesus Charlie. So in the first Mirror Theory, Jesus has the name of Charlie. Then when it came to this book, it was like, you know, Betsy, just do it. Just be who you are. Let it all out. And just see what happens if you do. And of course, after I did, things, you know, better things happened. So it is a challenge. I think I agree with you completely that it is about acknowledging this vulnerability in you, or whatever it is that you have that you don't, that you resist, and allowing it to be. In fact, I can tell you that when I was in California, I resisted being a secretary so much because even though I was poor as I could be, I resisted being a secretary because I said, you know, this voice in my head said, well, you went to college, you have an education, you know, what are you doing thinking of being a secretary? I went to a school where they would, you know, have, you know, they would have just cringed in their boots if I had told them I was going to be a secretary. So I had all this judgment around the idea. And yet, when I finally said that, okay, if you know, no matter how much I resisted it, all my opportunities, it was like the universe just kept shoving in my face, you know, opportunity after opportunity to be a secretary, and I kept pushing it away and pushing it away. But when I finally succumbed to it, I said, well, if I'm going to be a secretary, then I'm going to get the best darn secretarial job this city has to offer. And that's, you know, that's when 3 weeks later I had that job. So it was, and that job was the greatest blessing in my life that it could have possibly been, because in California, in the entertainment business, the salaries are unreal. And so for what I got paid for this executive assistant job was unbelievable compared to what I would have been paid somewhere else in the country. And it was a beautiful support for me. I mean, it was the universe just rushed in with whatever I needed. So it's, you know, that is the perfect example of pushing and pushing and pushing away exactly what I needed until I finally got to the point where I just had to say, okay, you know, okay, I get it.
Right. You know, I think it's just fantastic that, you know, you just said it provided exactly what you needed. And before that, it was providing exactly what you needed too, which was a lot of examples of how you didn't want to live.
Right. That's right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, and I also find, too, you know, and I constantly go through periods of a lot of growth and change. Like, everything in my life always, even as a kid, it just always changed. Even if things around me weren't changing, my perspective on life was constantly changing as I grew and as I, you know, stepped back from my growth. You know, I just always created a lot of differences. And what I notice is, especially in primary relationships, you know, I'll enter into a good relationship or a friendship with somebody, and as I grow, that changes. And I heard you, you know, at the beginning saying that you had just finished your second divorce. Were you unable to really kind of make those changes while still in the relationship, because when you're in a relationship that connected as a marriage, or you know, the way we think a marriage should be connected, when one person does a lot of changing, both people really have to change to some degree, because it, then you're in a marriage with a different person. Am I making sense to you?
Yeah, you are. And I can tell you that when I have been able to look back on both marriages and see how I attracted them to me, and how they mirrored something that, you know, the insecurities that I felt in the marriage were mirrored in both of us, not necessarily in the exactly the same way, but they were mirrored of me while I was with them. And so when the second marriage ended, what I said to myself was, I wasn't going to get into any more relationships until I got my own self together, because I kept attracting, you know, who I was to myself, and I had to go within and do some growth within before I would be ready for anyone else. And so that was basically what I understood. And I mean, I've gone back through many relationships, and my mother especially was a primary one in terms of being challenged, and even that, when I've been in retrospect, I can see how when I was young, I was always, you know, she was always telling me that I wasn't the child, or insinuating in some way that I wasn't the child that she expected me to be or wanted me to be, and yet I was constantly doing the same thing, saying to myself she wasn't the mother that I wanted. So both of us were in the same frame of mind regarding our relationship, and so in that way we were perfect mirrors of each other. And I have learned through the years that, in a way, my mother was the catalyst for me that pushed me into what is happening now, because of the very reason that we were such oil and vinegar together, and how I didn't care for her priorities or her purpose in life and what she was doing. That was the catalyst for me that pushed me to say that I had to find something different. I had to find what worked for me. So she was really a great gift to me, and I believe that sometimes the people who challenge us the very most are probably the people who care the most about us, because who else would bother? You know, who else would bother or volunteer to be a catalyst in my life than someone who really cares? So it's given me a different perspective on it, and I sometimes have this, you know, imaginary fantasy that before we came, we were all together, and all the people that I've met in my life, and I say, well, this is a challenge I have, and I need to live this, and somebody else stops in and says, oh, I'll do that one for you, because I need to learn such and such and such and such. And that's how we form this game together, that we're all here together, learning together, giving each other the challenges that we promised we would give beforehand. And then when we leave, we're going to get together again and say, now, didn't that work great, and didn't this work great? You know, that idea of how, you know, we're all – how we're here to progress and to grow emotionally. So I sort of, you know, that's been a very healing thought for me, that idea that we come here together to learn together, and we're offering each other the challenges. And even you and I, you know, we probably said, well, I'm going to need to have some radio promotion. You said, well, I want to be a radio person, so I'll be the one, you know, we'll get together that way, you know. So it's just kind of really fun, you know, connecting with people in this way, because that's what I believe happened.
Right, I agree. I share that belief wholeheartedly with you. I try to remind myself of that when I'm getting really frustrated with someone in my life. It's like, where were we before? And a lot of times I'm remembering it a couple days later, as opposed to when I could be remembering it, which is in the moment. But I do believe that, and I share that with you as well, because my sister, who is like my nemesis, and not only, you know, I'm trying to relate to her differently, and she. My mom was around, but my sister raised me. My sister was the one that was, you know, there all the time. My mom worked two different jobs, and my dad was in the Marine Corps, and he traveled a lot. And we weren't traveling Marine Corps brats. We were stationary Marine Corps brats. So, you know, it was one of those deals where, you know, we are like oil and water. We just don't, you know, we have a hard time mixing. And the rest of our family just kind of stands back and watches the dynamic. And, you know, and just kind of marvels over how we don't get along. But I look at her, and there's so many times that I can really pinpoint being motivated by her, either to do something because, you know, she wanted me to, or to do something because I was determined I was not going to do it her way.
Right.
But also, when I look at the grand scheme of my growth, she really has reflected to me things that are not harmonious in myself. And, you know, I am very thankful to her for that. And, you know, we still kind of iron it out, because she's in that place where she's staying. She's, as we're getting older, she's starting to back off a little bit, not a whole lot. How are you getting along with your family? Is your family still around? And
yes, well, my sisters, I have two sisters who are still around, and you know, they don't cotton to the ideas of that I write about. They're not into this vibe at all. And so it's been a great lesson in release, you know, and not having to agree to still love. And I had a lot of struggles with my younger sister, but today we've reached a place where we've just, you know, I reached a place where I stopped thinking it was about them and it was about me. And I stopped thinking they should be different, and they didn't have to change. You know, if I didn't like something, I was the one who had to change, not them. And so I think when that happened, they could feel it. They could feel that I had let go of blame, and they responded. Even though we don't share the same philosophy of life, and we don't, you know, they may not understand what I'm writing about, there's a feeling of peace between us, because there's been a release of expectations of that some that can't be met, expectations that they should be this or they should be that, because you know, people are here for their own reasons, and they aren't here to please me. I'm here to please myself, and they're here to please themselves. And so I always like the idea of you know, would I rather be with miserable sisters who agreed with me on everything, or would I rather be with happy sisters who didn't? And I'd rather be with happy sisters who didn't. So I'd sort of let that stuff go about, you have to agree. You know, nobody has to agree with you about anything. And just because you don't agree doesn't mean you can't love. So it's worked out fine. It doesn't mean I don't see a lot of them, but it's perfectly fine when I do see them.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, you said that so eloquently, because that is, I find that when I'm not honoring myself and I'm trying to please or even, you know, go against someone else, like my sister, for example, that's when I'm not living up to who I want to be and honoring myself. And I'm learning that balance, and I'm getting it more routinely, and it's integrating in. But I definitely have my days when I'm off. And I know that, because I start pushing. You know, energetically, I'll push, you know, against my sister or whoever it is. And that push just really doesn't need to be there, because it's myself that I'm pushing against. But one of the things that when I'm working with people, one of the things that comes up a lot, because I work with people in their emotional bodies, is it comes up that you have to be willing to give up everything. And that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to have to give up everything, but you have to be willing to let go of the things that don't work for you. And people will very much resist that idea that they have of family and how it should look. And so to have you talk about your relationship with your sisters, where, you know, they're doing their thing and you're doing mine, because I can tell you, nobody in my family cottons to this idea too. You must be from the South. I caught that. It was kind of funny. You know, they don't get into it either. And what I'm finding is a lot of people that are really making changes and are really stepping out, you know, they're not surrounded by a bunch of people that do buy into their ideas or have the same philosophies. And so it's challenging for people to step out. So do you have any words of wisdom or any comfort? I mean, obviously it worked for you, but do you have anything that you can offer people that are listening that just need that extra incentive and extra support and letting go, or being willing to let go of relationships and let them fall into a natural order?
Well, I would say the only motivation I think that ever works is that you are going to gain something from what you do. So I would say that when you let go of a relationship that isn't working, what you're doing is honoring yourself. You're honoring yourself. That doesn't mean letting go of it in a negative way, because whatever way you let go of it is the way people will let go of you. So you have to remember that how you're doing something is what you're inviting back. But I had a friend that I had since childhood, since third grade actually, that when I came back from California, my life had changed so drastically, and my ideas about myself, how I was treating myself, had changed so drastically that the relationship didn't work anymore, because I wasn't willing to be in the domination dominated relationship that it was before. And so when I came back, it was all the stuff that I remembered of how it was, but didn't fit anymore. So I just asked for a little freedom of my own to grow. You know, I tried to put it in a way that it was all on me, and it was all on me because she hadn't changed at all. I was the one who had changed. So it was about me not being compatible in that relationship anymore, and she wasn't to blame for anything. So that's what you need to do. When you don't want to be in a relationship anymore, it isn't because the other person has done something wrong, and so there's no blame to be given. It's only about the fact that you've grown in a way they haven't, and you each need to be separate in order for your individual growth. And in that way, you know, you can bless them and say you were perfect for me while we were together, but now we're in different directions, and so we're attracting different mirrors, that's all, with different ideas. It's all, you know, I think about it that we shouldn't take life so seriously, that it's all about coming here to live these lessons, and we're all going to be back together again later to discuss how it all went. So it's just about honoring yourself along the way and letting yourself be who you are. There's really nothing more relaxing than just being you. Honestly, when I started this process of promoting the book, and I said a prayer, and the answer I came was, all you have to do is tell the truth. You're never going to be uncomfortable if you're telling the truth. So just tell the truth, whatever question you're asked, just tell the truth. And so that's what you need to do in a nice way when you want to move on, and the person with you is not, you know, with you on that. But you don't have to, you know, it's all about respecting each other's ideas. And if you're with someone who isn't respecting your ideas and you want that respect, then you have to respect your own ideas, because that's the only way you're going to attract people who respect you, by respecting your own ideas. And they're always telling you something about yourself, you know. If you're with someone who's putting you down, then you're putting somebody else down. In fact, I can give you a personal experience of how that worked for me if you would like to hear it.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, when I was in California and I started getting these ideas, I was just blown away by what I was hearing, and they were impacting my life so powerfully that I had this, you know, my first reaction was that everybody should be hearing these ideas. And so I was like trying to, you know, maybe being a little bit patronizing as I was telling people, almost with the idea that what's the matter that you don't get it, that kind of attitude. And so naturally, I attracted a person into my life who was patronizing as all get out, and it was making me really uncomfortable. So I didn't really realize why I had this person in my life, so I sat down one day and I took a piece of pen and paper, and I wrote down all the ways this person was making me feel. You know, uncomfortable with myself, like I couldn't make a decision on my own, like I couldn't, like I wasn't worth anything. And there were like about 14 things I wrote down. And then I said to myself, how am I giving this to somebody else? And the minute I said that, how am I giving this to somebody else, I knew what I was doing. I realized how I was being rather patronizing about these ideas and justifying it by saying that, you know, these ideas had helped me so much that they would help everybody else so much. But and I was also doing it with a personal friend of mine who was at a bad time in her life trying to make decisions, and I was making her feel like she couldn't make the decisions on her own and I knew what she should do. Well, you know, that wasn't working for me. So I told her, you know, I called her and apologized and said she knew exactly what she needed for her journey, and I did not. And then I stopped being this patronizing about these attitudes and about these ideas and stuff. And this, what happened was that this other person in my life was still in my life because she had to be in my life. It was around my job. But what happened was I would just see her behaving the same way, and it would just bounce off my aura. It was like it didn't impact my heart, because if we all have this aura around us that represents the ideas that we put out into the universe, then if ideas come back that we haven't expressed, they don't impact. So it doesn't mean that the other person ever changed. It's just that I had changed, so that impact on me did not reach my heart. It couldn't get past my aura. It's like the image I use of bouncing off the aura is probably the most vivid I can use, because that's exactly what happened. And it's like you notice it, but you don't care. Mm-hmm. And so that is, you know, what is going on with this, what you call it, the law of attraction, or you call it cause and effect, or you call it action-reaction. It's always the pulling of energy back to itself, regardless of the name you give it. And so that is, you know, what I would tell people who are trying to, you know, change their life. Be the person you want the other person to be. And if they aren't that, they can't be that person, they will fall out of your life in one way or another. Because if you are being one way and they are being another way, you won't be compatible for long. Mm-hmm.
You know, and I love how it keeps coming back to, in some way it comes back to personal responsibility and accountability and taking care of ourselves, because it really is about that. And I like in the book how you've got it broken down and you've got different things that you write in here. And at the end of the truth chapter, you have what you feel is what you have prioritized. There is no other secret to the meaning of life. And I particularly liked how that blended into the next chapter, which is advice. And I have to tell you, I have advice starred. About midway through, I went back and just starred the whole chapter because there was so much in that chapter that spoke to me. But you start off with, you know, whose advice is worthy. Trust that you are everything you need to be. Trust that life has meaning. Trust that goals have purpose. Trust that being is enough. And then just the whole chapter, and Lazarus is who you were talking about in this chapter, was just, you know, it just really spoke to me. So that, I don't know whether it was a combination for myself that those chapters came back to back, truth and then advice, but I loved how they blended together, and it really did speak to me. And what I like about your book is you can read a chapter individually and you can be complete with it, or you can read it like I did, which was straight through. And you know, the fact that you've got these little you've got questions to ponder at the back. They give, you know, I'd really like to go back now that I've got more time to not just be reading it for the show, but to actually work the book, because I think that you've really given someone a tool in this book of how to sort through and find their own truth and step into their own authenticity.
Yeah. You know, it's funny that you should bring up the chapter of Lazarus, because I remember when I first started writing the book, and I came to the chapter of Lazarus, I cried all the way through that chapter. Mm-hmm. And it was so meaningful to me, and I felt such a connection to Lazarus. And, you know, a lot of it was so relevant to my life, too. So I just got goosebumps when you were talking about that, because it was so emotional for me. But I wrote the end of the chapter, the page, the questions. The reason for that is to bring the ideas from the chapter into the reader's life in a meaningful way, because it's one thing to read a book and just put it down, and it's another to have to, you know, to bring that, what is in the chapter, into your own life in a meaningful way. So I wanted that connection for the reader, because I wanted the ideas to help them with whatever they were going through. And then I made the next page about my journey, because I wanted to connect with the reader on that level, that you know, I had been through struggles of my own, and I wanted to be honest about them and share them with the reader, so the reader could identify and feel that they weren't alone. Because a lot of times you feel so alone in your struggle that and even though you know that other people must have them, you don't necessarily hear about them, and you don't necessarily get to share how other people are going through them together. So I've had a lot of feedback that people have appreciated that, and it was wonderful for me to let go and just say whatever was.
Yeah, you know, and that is one thing, too, that it's so nice to know that somebody else, you know, went through. It's almost like, you know, it's not that misery loves company, but, you know, you just, when you're going through something significant and it's traumatic, it's just nice to know that you're not, even though you might be alone in that moment, you're not alone. Other people have gone through it and survived it, and it's almost like watching, you know, a group of people cheer you on from the bank, you know, and helping you get out of this torrential water and stuff. So I think it's really nice that you did that. And the whole way that you put it together was just really, like I said, I really enjoyed the book, and I definitely want to be able to go back and work the chapters for my own, you know, perspective and growth. I think it helped.
Yeah.
I think it will help a lot, because I know just the thinking I was doing as I was reading it for the show was, you know, the whole time I kept thinking, gosh, I wish I had a little bit of extra time to sit down and just work this out. And, you know, so I'll be going back and doing that. You also wrote at the end of that chapter, you put one of the highlight things you have is believe in your wisdom if you want to get rid of fear. When this disruptor is gone, life is seen as dear. And I just think that that's really, you know, if people do follow that inner guidance, usually they see that fear is just their faith. They're just seeing it from a different perspective.
Yeah. The only fear that needs to be, there's logical fear and there's illogical fear. And logical fear is if you eat something poisonous, you might die. That's logical fear. If you get too close to a cliff, you might fall off. That's logical fear. So those are the fears that we have just because we're in human form and we're in an environment where things can happen. But illogical fear is fear of, for instance, of my fear of going on the radio. You know, that's an illogical fear because, you know, all I have to do is get on the radio and talk about my truth, and there's nothing fearful about that. So we need to stop in our lives and ask if, you know, this is a logical fear or an illogical fear. And if it's illogical, then ego is just trying to keep us from growth. That's all. It's that little voice inside that says that's a fearful situation when it really isn't at all. It's just a step to growth.
Right, right. You know, and as you were saying that, I was just kind of, it took me to like a family moment where I had my extended family with me, and my mother's extended family was around us, and they really, it's kind of interesting because I don't see my family as much as my sisters do, my extended family, and so when I do see them, they're always like, oh, well, what are you up to, or what are you doing, and I've noticed that over the years, they've kind of stopped asking, and because they really just don't understand. And to ask my sisters, what does your sister do? They don't know. But I was, when you were talking about that, I was taken back to a moment where I was talking with one of my aunts, and I withheld information about a question. She was asking me something about myself, and I kind of withheld the information. And it was because I was concerned about judgment with it. But then as you were saying that, I was thinking to myself, well, what do I do? There's absolutely nothing I do in my life that is harmful to somebody else. And so there's something, I don't even know really why I'm sharing that, other than there must be some significance to the fact that I'm not hurting anybody else with my beliefs and how I live and, you know, what works for me. I mean, because if it's working for me, that's all it needs to be doing. I mean, because I really am not impacting other people's beliefs in terms of how they live their life or if they don't want to believe. So have you ever run across anything like
very
that? Where
similar, yes. In fact, I can identify completely with that because what happens is that what happened to me was that I was constantly letting other people share their beliefs but not letting myself share my beliefs. So, right. I mean, it's just spending time with my sisters or this friend I had. I mean, she was constantly spouting off what she thought about the world, but somehow I wasn't allowed to do that. So I had to get past that. You know, that was my problem, not her problem. So it was like you shut yourself up in front of your aunt because for some reason you didn't think it was, you know, she could share, but you couldn't share too.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all about, you know, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. Why should you be able to share your ideas and me not be able to share my ideas? Just because your ideas might be the consensus or the majority doesn't mean that mine aren't valid. You know, everyone's ideas are valid regardless of what they are because everyone's truth is individual. So it isn't about telling her that her truths aren't right, but it certainly is about being able to share yours as well as her sharing hers. And that's something that I have to remember, too. That it's that just because, you know, most people might believe that it's impossible to talk to Jesus doesn't mean that that's my reality.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, my reality is a different reality. Doesn't mean it's
right.
Wrong, just different.
Right. And I have to say, you know, I really resonate with conversations with Jesus because when I was a child, I can remember very clearly if I were frightened or just uncomfortable or, you know, even just bored. You know, it was very natural for me to just have a conversation, especially when I was frightened, to have a conversation with Jesus. That was my protector. And I was raised a Southern Baptist, and, you know, I never really integrated into or believed in the ideas of the church. So I always kind of stood back. But Jesus was definitely the energy that I always radiated to. And it's so funny. I have friends that are long-term friends, especially this one person that I've been friends with since we were early teenagers, and she's really into her church, and she's really into teaching Bible school, and of course, my life doesn't look like that at all, and so sometimes we'll get into discussions about her Bible school class and the lessons that she's preparing, and she's always, it always shocks her that, like, I'll know about that. And she was, I remember having a conversation with her where she's like, you read the Bible? I mean, like, she was just floored. And I'm like, yeah, I've read it several times, actually, because I took the initiative to do so. And so we got into a conversation about Jesus, and she really had no idea that I was so connected in that way. Like, I see him actually as more kin to me than she does. She sees Jesus as somebody above her, whereas I see Jesus as, you know, as someone I can commune with, someone that is loving of me, someone that protects me, you know, someone that is just, you know, always there.
Right.
As opposed to someone I have to please.
Right. Well, that's an interesting example, because the message that I've always heard through this writing is that when you put Jesus on a pedestal, you separate yourself from his love because you're saying he's different or he's special and something mm-hmm. you aren't. And how can you connect with something that you aren't? So you're living the relationship, and she's still thinking it's not quite available.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, it's really interesting. I find it fascinating sometimes to just kind of watch, you know, the dynamics between people and what their belief systems are and how they work in the world and how they integrate that. But, you know, I think that people really need to understand that, you know, like with you writing this book, the people that are ready for this book will gravitate towards it, and the people that aren't won't.
Yeah.
So there's no harm done.
Right.
You know, just like there's other things out there that, you know, when you're ready, you gravitate, or if it's yours, you gravitate towards, and if not, you don't. And yeah, so there's no competition. There's no...
God is in every religion if the people practicing it have love in their hearts.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't take our beliefs with us when we leave here anyway. We take the love we found from having them. So I always urge people to believe whatever brings you love. If what you believe doesn't bring you love, then that's the time you need to stop and say, wait a minute, if this isn't bringing me love, what's the purpose of believing it? But if your beliefs are bringing you love, and you know, religion is all part of the illusion. You know, it's just an illusionary concept of you're drawn to something that for some reason you need in your life. But if you're full of love, that's the bottom line. That's the bottom line. It doesn't matter. So, I mean, even if your aunt has a belief system that brings her lots of love, it isn't wrong for her. She's right where she belongs. If it doesn't mm-hmm. bring her a lot of love, then that's something else.
Right, exactly. So, Betsy, what was your favorite chapter in the book?
I can't give you...
Did you have one?
No, because every time I'm working on a chapter, I think it's the best chapter I ever wrote because it's answering all my questions in the moment. So...
Right.
I always think that, you know, for instance, when I was writing the Lazarus chapter, I was just, you know, as I told you, I cried throughout the whole chapter, tears of release and joy, really, mostly. And, but then when I went on to the next chapter, you know, by Andrew, I thought that was the best chapter. So I can't, it's always about what is touching me and what reaching me in the moment, you know, what I need in the moment and honoring self in the moment, honoring momentary growth, you know. It's always about that.
Yeah. Now, with each of the, because each chapter talks about different people that Jesus was acquainted with. Was there one, I mean, obviously in the moment you were questioning things about your own personal life, but is there one overall that you identify with a little bit more, or one that you, you know, constantly go back and work through that stuff?
No, but I think the chapter on Judas was interesting to me because it was so unexpected. I think I had an idea of Judas that was completely different than what I had after I finished that chapter. And it brought a lot more compassion into my life for the struggles that we all go through, because it made me realize that Judas was, you know, he thought he was doing something that would bring him love, because he thought that turning Jesus in was going to get Jesus to leave town. And then he would still have Jesus as his teacher or as his guide or as his spiritual guru, whatever. But so that, you know, almost everything we do in our lives, I think, is because we think it's going to get us love. It doesn't always get us love. But everything I've ever done is because I thought it was going to get me love. And when you realize that people are doing that, I mean, even people when they murder somebody, they think they're murdering them because they think it's going to save them or bring them something they want or get them something they want or get them the love they need. So it really brings everything into a kind of a perspective about why we're here and what we're seeking while we're here. And we all want to expand our hearts and feel more of that wonderful feeling of love that we get. And so it's just a misunderstanding of how to find it. That's all it is. So, you know, I guess Judas was one of the chapters that made me stop and think really about that idea that he was just trying to keep Jesus around for a while because he thought Jesus would leave town when he told him that the soldiers were coming for him. He thought he would get out of town, but of course Jesus didn't react the way Judas would have reacted, and Judas was sure that Jesus would react the way that he would react, which is what we all do. We always think people will react as we would in that situation, but Jesus was in another place in his life, and he knew that that was something he wanted to go through for what he could reveal about each of us and each and every one of us. So, you know, that I'd have to answer that question with saying it was Judas chapter.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the things I just kind of flipped to that in looking, if I'm remembering correctly, this is one of the chapters. This chapter is betrayal. Yeah. And it's one of the chapters that Jesus did not relate to so much personally. Like, it really was, betrayal was all about how Judas felt. And I'd like to share at the beginning of that chapter, you say, why is betrayal so painful? Betrayal is an act of doing in a way you'd hate to be done to. And that's the beginning. But then you start to question. And it says, wasn't betrayal an issue for some of your friends? And he answers, it was. And then you asked, did they mirror some betrayal in you? And this is what the response was, and this is what told me when I was reading this that this chapter was going to be slightly different. Had I felt betrayed, they would have, but mirrors were emotional, not pictorial. At the end of my journey, I understood their growth and praised their participation. Therefore, respect was my emotion, not the feeling of betrayal. So that wasn't, as I went through the chapter, I realized that betrayal wasn't an emotion that Jesus embodied so much as it was something that really came from Judas. So I like the fact that this chapter really set up what I've come to know as truth for myself, is that, you know, Jesus was accepting of Judas and was very close to Judas, and that Judas was just a troubled individual that was just trying to make his way in the world the best he could.
Right. And also, you cannot feel an emotion if you haven't given it. So if Jesus at that point had not betrayed anybody, why would he feel the pain of betrayal? I mean, you only feel the pain of what you had given to others to feel. So at that point in his life, all he was doing was telling everybody to live the life that they, you know, was right for them, to love their past, to appreciate where they were, to have compassion. So he wasn't in the process of betraying anyone. So why would he feel it? He knew at that point, I think, when he came back from solitude, he knew what his life was all about. He knew what he had been in meditation, and that's all coming up in the next book, how he learned about meditation while he was traveling, and when he went into solitude, it was to meditate and to realize that he could search the whole world over, and he still wouldn't get the answers he wanted, that he had to go within to get the answers he wanted. And so when he came back to Jerusalem after he'd been traveling, he was an enlightened human being, and he was there then to try to demonstrate what it was to be an enlightened person and what it was to go within and discover who you truly were. So he was in a completely different place. As I, you know, and I would say that, you know, his growth was not, he was in a place that the people who he came back to were not in, but that didn't mean that he didn't stay in that place. And he said in this next book, it's about how he was in this vibration, and whenever he felt himself going out of the vibration, he would go into meditation again. It wasn't like the meditation left him, it was like he left the meditation, or he left the vibration, this vibration of emotion that is out there for all of us. And so it's about giving, you know, it's about that idea of the mirror all the time. You have to be the person you want to attract, and if you give an emotion to others, that's what you're going to feel coming back. And if somebody gives the feeling of betrayal back to you, it isn't going to impact. It's not going to make you feel betrayed because you haven't betrayed anyone. That's why it's such a powerful thought. It's mm-hmm. like you can create your emotional future completely by what you're giving to other people.
Right. So I just want to just make clear, we can have mirrors that also have other characteristics that are not ours.
Yeah, I mean, you have emotional mirrors are what make what you feel. If you haven't, if you can just imagine yourself standing in front of a mirror, a real mirror, a literal mirror. The mirror can only reflect back to you who you are. The mirror has no power on its own. The mirror doesn't take any action on its own. It's simply a mirror of who you are in the moment. So the mirror can only hurt you if you've given that feeling. It's just a reflection. It's nothing else. The person in front of you who is hurting your feelings, it's only a reflection. They have no power beyond that. They're only the reflection of how you've hurt someone else's feelings. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily that person, because, you know, it's not picture for picture. It's emotion for emotion.
Right. So, Betsy, we only have a few more minutes, and I want to give you the opportunity to share any information or any words of wisdom that we may not have gotten into, you know, that you want to make sure that you get across today.
Okay. Well, I just like to say the purpose of this book is not to debate who is right and who is wrong about what happened in those times. The purpose of the book is to encourage people to live what is right for them now. And they can learn more about me by going to my website at www.betsythompson.com. There are links there to bookstores so that they can buy the book if they're interested. And I also have links to my blog, which has a lot of has some blogs about my emotional growth, and to Twitter and to Facebook and to LinkedIn. And information. There's more information about the book on the website, and I hope, and they can connect to me through the website because they can go to the contact button and email me if they have any questions they'd like to ask me personally.
Right. And I must apologize to you. Normally I will mention that throughout the show, and I got so engrossed in our conversation that I put it in the chat room, but I never bothered to mention it because I was just so involved in what we were talking about.
Well,
I wasn't thinking.
I couldn't believe it when you said the hour's almost up. I said, oh, no.
I know. So, yeah, I want to thank you so much for coming on here and for, you know, taking your leap of faith and writing this book. And I'll definitely be reading your other books because if they're even, you know, a fraction of as fascinating as this or as informative. And, you know, for me, this book really, you know, triggered some growth and you know, offered some help in digging more into myself and just going deeper within myself and understanding myself better. So, again, I want to thank you so much for stepping up and being you and your authentic self, and definitely for coming on the show today because I've really enjoyed our conversation.
Me too. Thank you so much for having me, Lynn. It's been delightful the whole time.
Wonderful. Yes, I agree. So I would just like to remind you guys that we'll be back in 2 weeks on the 9th of February. This year's already starting to go by very quickly. I hope that you're enjoying it. We'll be talking with Grandfather Yellow Horse Man. He's going to be talking with us about medicine of the heart. So I hope that you'll join us then. And in the meantime, I hope that you have a wonderful couple of weeks and enjoy everything that's going on. Please take some time to visit Betsy's website, www.betsythompson.com. I think you're going to find it fascinating, and I hope that you will purchase this book because it is life-changing, and it's very helpful if you're going through some processes. Betsy, thanks again, and I'm very, very happy that you were on the show today.
Thank you, Lynn. I love connecting with you.
Great. Have a good day, have a good week, and we'll see you soon.